This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The pieces of the Biden administration's trade and foreign policy agenda are starting to fall into place, at least conceptually, as laid out by the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, in his maiden speech this week. Blinken says U.S. trade and foreign policy are inseparable from domestic policy, and the Biden team will pursue them all the way, putting labor protection and job security first.
Some of us previously argued for free trade agreements because we believed Americans would broadly share in the economic gains that those deals would shape the global economy in ways that we wanted. We had good reasons to think those things, but we didn't do enough to understand who would be negatively affected and what would be needed to adequately offset their pain or to enforce agreements that were already on the books.
Vowing to now use every tool to go after intellectual property theft, currency manipulation, and corruption, but maybe more slowly, new trade deals.
Our trade policies will need to answer very clearly how they will grow the American middle class, create new and better jobs, and benefit all Americans, not only those for whom the economy is already working.
Biden's trade policy will be less confrontational than his predecessor, except maybe on China, but even there, he states the latest strategic guidance calls for more investment at home to outcompete China.
The United States produces 15% of the world's carbon pollution. That's a lot, and we badly need to get that number down. But even if we brought it down to zero, we wouldn't solve the crisis, because the rest of the world is producing the other 85%.
And while Blinken, as Obama Deputy Secretary of State, promoted the Trans-Pacific Partnership to counter China's influence, Blinken vowed Biden would chart a different course than Obama. What that is and how the Biden trade approach will now impact talks with the United Kingdom, the European Union, Asian and African nations remains an open question. A recent Farm Futures survey found why farmers feel threatened by potential policy objectives under the Biden administration. The survey shows nearly 9 of every 10 farmers believes taxes will go up under a Biden administration. Another 71% believe the WOTUS rule will be overturned. Only 22% believe markets will stabilize with a new trade strategy. And 4 out of every 5 farmers believes there will be fewer government payments going to agriculture. An Iowa farmer told Farm Futures, "I'm worried about everything in the survey." The publication points out the unease in farm country today that feels similar to farmer attitude after President Barack Obama was elected. And while the farm organizations and lobbyists engage with new political leadership on Capitol Hill, it may be some comfort to remember that when it comes to ag policy, usually the worst doesn't happen, but you need to be prepared for changes, according to a Farm Futures analyst. Yesterday, Thursday, was the start of the annual Commodity Classic, but this time, instead of being in person in San Antonio, it took a virtual format in lieu of the pandemic. One of the topics that many look forward to from the Commodity Classic is the corn and soybean outlook for the upcoming year. And an agricultural economist says there are many factors that could impact corn and bean prices this year. Michael Langmeyer, Purdue University Ag Economics Professor, presented the outlook during the virtual Commodity Classic event. Langmeyer explains the outlook for this year.
There's a lot of factors could impact both soybean and corn prices, and one of the big ones is acreage. What is the acreage going to end up being for both corn and soybeans? I mean, most market analysts expect soybean acreage to increase from last year, certainly, but how much would it increase? Both corn and soybeans are very short in terms of stocks to use, and particular soybeans is extremely tight stocks to use. And so, you know, rather than just having one of the crops be relatively short from a stocks to use, you have both crops. And so really there's incentive to increase both acreage.
However, the largest incentive right now, he says, is probably to increase soybean acreage in 2021.
This is not new necessarily, because this has been the case several of the last years. The fact that it looks like, at least in the eastern Corn Belt, that soybeans might be more profitable than corn in 2021. They certainly were more profitable than corn in 2020. And if you go back a few years, 2016, 2017, and 2018, soybeans were substantially more profitable than corn. And so because of the very tight stocks to use, there's such a wide band around possible corn and soybean prices. This makes it really, really really difficult to make these acreage decisions.
So what about prices for corn and beans in 2021? Langmeyer says the ranges are wide.
Kind of the midpoint corn futures price for the December contract is about $4.55, but there's a 25% chance that that could be below $3.85. There's a 25% chance it could be above $5.50. That's a very large range. The same is true with soybeans. The midpoint price is $12 per bushel, but there's a 25% chance that it could be below $10.50. And there's a 25% chance it could be above $13.50. So just a lot of uncertainty related to both of those.
And while it may be hard to make decisions on what to plant this year, Langmeyer says there is two important decisions to consider.
Prospects for net returns for corn, soybeans, and wheat look pretty good for 2021. And so that makes making crop insurance decisions even more important. Make sure you have a decent revenue guarantee. This is not the year to reduce your coverage. And one of the reasons I mentioned that is premiums are up substantially this year because of the higher prices and the high volatility. You've got a lot to lose this year. But another thing that's extremely important is developing a marketing plan. With a good marketing plan, you can try to protect that price to some extent and try to set a floor or reduce the downside risk.
And again, that's Michael Langmeyer, a Purdue University Ag Economics professor. Moving on now here on your Friday, from crops to livestock, the National Pork Producers Council elected new leadership during its recent National Pork Industry Forum. Jen Sorensen of Iowa takes over as the new president. She says the pork industry faces multiple challenges this year, including animal activism. California's Proposition 12 is a perfect example of that activism.
NPPC, along with the American Farm Bureau Federation, sued the state of California over Prop 12, which prohibits the sale of pork raised through production methods that don't meet its arbitrary criteria. We expect this to be a long legal battle. Our case is currently with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, with oral arguments scheduled for April 14th. In the meantime, NPPC is working in California to influence the pending regulation to minimize negative impact to producers.
The pork industry, especially meat packers, has spent a lot of money to keep workers safe from COVID. However, she says adding even more worker safety mandates to those already in place may do more harm than good.
Meatpacking facilities alone have invested $1.5 billion to ensure worker safety. We must be careful not to unnecessarily disrupt the food supply chain with mandates designed to achieve worker safety outcomes already achieved. The only material impact of such a temporary emergency standard would be increased food prices, potential meat shortages, and additional staggering losses for farmers from the lost value of livestock, again backed up on farms.
The national pork producers are still working to get help for COVID relief aid into the hands of the nation's pork producers as soon as possible.
We're focusing on working with the USDA to implement relief provided by legislation passed by Congress in December in the form of compensation to pork producers for the lost value of hogs they were forced to euthanize due to overcrowding on farms during the peak of the COVID crisis. We hope to see this much-needed relief extend to producers as soon as possible.
Also, immigration reform is another important topic to the national pork producers because producers need access to an adequate supply of labor.
The Biden administration is taking on immigration reform, and we continue to push for reform to the H-2A visa program to include year-round workers essential to a stable U.S. pork industry. Existing visa programs are designed for seasonal agriculture, and that is not a good fit for the U.S. pork sector, where the work is full-time, year-round. NPPC seeks visa system reform that establishes a legal and productive workforce without placing an undue burden on employers. Restricting foreign workers hurts U.S. agriculture, as these jobs will simply not be filled by U.S. citizens due to declines in populations in rural areas where most farms and packing plants are located.
Sorensen has spent the last 10 years with Iowa Select Farms, a business that markets more than 5 million hogs a year. She grew up on a livestock farm raising pigs and row crops. Again, that was Jen Sorensen, the new president of the National Pork Producers Council. And moving on now into State of Illinois Ag News for your Friday, the USDA National Ag Statistics Service here in Illinois released the county estimates for corn and soybean production from last year. Local counties in our WSMI listing area in alphabetical order are as follows. For corn, Bond County had an average yield of 186.6, Calhoun County 177.5, Christian County 199.1, Clinton County 176.9, Fayette County 182.8 bushels for corn last year, Greene County 191.7, Jersey 193.2. Moving on to other counties in our listing area on corn production last year, Macoupin County 192.9, Madison County 186.9, Montgomery County 191.8, Morgan County 203.9, St. Clair County 163.2, Sangamon County 203.9, Scott County 189.2, Shelby County 194.9, and finally Washington County with 180.9 bushels per acre for corn production last year. They also released the numbers for soybean estimates for counties in our listening area, and they go as follows, again in alphabetical order. Bond 58.1, Calhoun 53.1, Christian 64.7, Clinton 51.6, Fayette 53.5, Greene 64.2, Jersey also 64.2. Other counties in our listening area for soybean production last year, Macoupin 66.2, Madison 57.6, Montgomery 62.2, Morgan 61.9, St. Clair 51.7, Sangamon 67.6, Scott 63.9, Shelby 59.3, and finally Washington had 50.9 bushels to the acre of soybean production last year. In other state ag news on this Friday, it looks like lemon shakeups and livestock shows will be returning this year. Fair season in Illinois was non-existent last year thanks to coronavirus, but a U of I Extension 4-H program coordinator says this year looks favorable and the kids in 4-H will have a chance to compete. Angie Abernathy says they have been advised to plan for in-person shows at local county fairs.
And that might look a little bit different this year, just depending on COVID, of course, and how our numbers are sitting. You know, we're definitely going to be enforcing things such as wearing your mask and social distancing. You know, we may have to set things up to where we have fewer people in the room, but in person is definitely looking like it's going to happen this year.
In a normal year, Illinois will see 104 county fairs and two state fairs between June and the third week of September. Moving on now into local ag news here on your Friday. We have a lot going on this weekend around the area. First off, we'll start with the Highland FFA chapter. We'll be having a used oil drive tomorrow morning at the Highland Middle School parking lot from 8 a.m. till noon. Again, that's a used oil drive by the Highland FFA chapter. They'll be hosting it at the Highland Middle School parking lot tomorrow morning from 8 till noon. The Madison County Fair Board will be having a drive-through chicken dinner tomorrow Saturday evening from 5 to 7. It'll be held at the Madison County Fairgrounds in Highland, and $10 gets you 6 pieces of chicken. Coming up later this month, the Macoupin County Ag Education Foundation is offering their $1,500 scholarship, $1,000 scholarship, and $7,500 scholarships for the upcoming school year. Applicants must be a graduating high school senior or a current college student who plans to attend or is attending an Illinois junior college, university, or career technical education program and must be majoring in agriculture. Applications are available through a Macoupin County High School guidance counselor, high school ag instructor, or from the Macoupin County Farm Bureau directly. An electronic copy of the application can be requested by contacting the Macoupin County Farm Bureau office by email or phone. That email is mcfb@frontiernet.net, and their phone number is 854-2571. All applications must be submitted to the Macoupin County Farm Bureau office by Friday, March 26th. And on Saturday, March 27th, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be hosting a household hazardous waste collection at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Butler from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. that Saturday. Acceptable wastes include oil-based paint and paint thinner, aerosol paint and cleaning products, insecticides, herbicides, pesticides, mercury, gasoline, antifreeze, and used motor oil, fluorescent light bulbs, old and expired medication, and household batteries. Again, the household hazardous waste collection will be held on Saturday, March 27th at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Butler from 8 till 3. And if you have any questions, you can contact the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro at 532-6171. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on this Friday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, March 5th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.